Whenever you're ready.
Hi, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm here with my friend Anne to share my experience, strength, and hope. My sobriety date is June 3rd, 1980, and one day at a time, I have been sober since then. You know, I'm very, very grateful for my sobriety. It's been quite a journey, and my sponsor told me to tell what it was like before, during, and after. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm an only child. My father was Korean military, and my earliest recollections are I had a lot of fear, doubt, and insecurity. I didn't know that's what it was at the time, but you know, I didn't feel right with life. I was referred to a psychiatrist and the priest and like that at a very early age, and no one diagnosed the hole in my soul, which I came to learn about in Alcoholics Anonymous. My parents were good to me. We moved around quite a bit in the military, and I remember always being terrified of starting a new school or like that. And like I said, though, my parents were very good to me. My mother was affected by alcoholism. She didn't drink, but it was pretty rampant in her immediate family. So, you know, I was very depressed. I was always crying, you know, throwing up or like that. And I just couldn't cope. Of course, my parents were very worried about me. And like I said, all the other people, the outside people that I was referred to, no one could figure out what was wrong. And fast forward, after many moves, we settled in Massachusetts, which is where we're all from, and I went to high school. And in high school, I was glad to be home. And in high school, I picked up a drink. I picked it up. I was with friends, and I picked it up to be cool. And I remember it like it was yesterday. It was at a quarry. A bunch of us, I was splitting a six pack with someone, and I had five, and that was like my first signpost. But what I got from this first drinking experience was I didn't feel that doubt, that insecurity, that fear. That, especially the fear was so dominant in my life. I was afraid of everything, and I didn't feel that when I was drinking. And so right away it became very important to me. I couldn't wait for the next occasion. And as you know, in that first outing drinking, I got sick. I had a blackout. I had to be carried away from the party. And you know, but as soon as I recovered physically, I couldn't wait to do it again. And I joke that if they had given out awards for social directing in high school, I would have been valedictorian, because I was always planning the occasion to drink, planning to ask the person 21 to buy it, and like that. And So right away, too, it was subtle at first, but everything started taking a back seat to this drinking. You know, sports, studies, relationships, whatever. The drinking was like top priority. Of course, I had a lot of controls. I was young, but nevertheless, I would always find a way to drink. I graduated from high school. I attribute that to a photographic memory, because I certainly didn't apply myself, you know, to my studies. And I graduated. I went to a job I really didn't want, and I went to a job because my father told me you had to go to work. And you know, in this first job, I got in with the drinking crowd, and my life became, it was kind of like just an extension of high school. only I was getting paid. And I was partying quite a bit after work. And this went on for quite some time, and the progression of this disease was going on too. You know, I had an enormous capacity to drink. And I was like proud of this, which is pretty sick in and of itself. I could consume a lot of booze and get up and walk away, and I thought that was wonderful. And you know, and life went on. I'm just, you know, party. I slowly, you know, it's like once I introduced a drink of alcohol into my system, another was a good idea. And you know, I had the mental obsession or the physical compulsion. You know, once you have one, you have another. The mental obsession, if it wasn't there, I was thinking about it. And I slowly started having, you know, a spiritual loss of values. And by that I mean, you know, I became a liar, a cheat, and a thief. And I didn't care what was going on with you. Or, you know, I really didn't care about other people. I mean, I didn't, you know, go out of my way to harm anyone, but I just didn't really care. I was so into myself and what was going on with me and where am I going to get the next drink. And it just, it allowed me not to feel those bad feelings which I talked about at first. And that kind of made it my friend. I was kind of a life of the party type drinker. You know, it just kind of transformed me from the shy, retiring, whiny, crying, depressed individual into the loud, arrogant, dance on the table type individual. I can do anything. 3 years into this, my first work experience, I was bored, and I thought I needed to do something exciting, and I applied to and got accepted to the airlines as a flight attendant. And before I was to go, the recruiter told me I had to lose 3 pounds. And, you know, I joke like today I'd have to lose 43, but that's like another story. Anyway, I'm running around telling anyone who would listen, how am I going to lose 3 pounds? And I couldn't put it together that all I had to do was miss a meal. And eventually I got referred to a doctor, and I went to see this doctor, and the room was jam-packed full. It took me 20 minutes to get up to the nurse to tell her I was there. I eventually got in to see this doctor. He put a stethoscope on my chest and prescribed an amphetamine barbiturate to help me lose 3 pounds. And I didn't know what these were, and nor was I honest with the doctor. This was speed, and that, you know, put me off in sort of it's like changing seats on the Titanic. Now I changed from drinking to pills. They're all drugs. A drug is a drug is a drug. Alcohol is a drug. It's the most widely abused drug in the world. And I remember seeing a film once that combining the pills and the booze was not a good idea. I try to control that, but I really didn't have any success. And I immediately started abusing these pills. One makes me feel this good. Imagine what two will do. And I had, I'd run out of them long before their time. And I would call this doctor and I would lie and say somebody stole my pocketbook, whatever, to get another prescription. I had quite a few prescriptions going and quite a few drug stores. And I'm telling myself that this is okay because a doctor prescribed it, and I found out in this program that's called bullshitting yourself. And I was like a total lunatic on these things. I was up for days cleaning the stove with the toothbrush, you know, just doing all these. I had so much energy. I'd do all these projects, but yet I'd abandon the project because I was racing so much I couldn't focus. Anyway, a law was passed taking these off the market, and I went back to my drug of choice, which was alcohol. And now I'm like full blown. I'm like the person with the apple on their head. Everyone sees it but you. And I was so into denial. The denial is a huge part of this disease. It's like, and I became willing to deny this to the death. I couldn't imagine a day without drinking. Or it was like the very thing that I thought was holding me together was tearing me apart. And, you know, and things started going downhill at a more rapid rate. I had all those outside troubles, you know, the arrests for drunk driving, the accidents, the protective custodies, and, you know, all that stuff, which is, you know, goes hand in hand with alcohol, active alcoholism. And, but I would, if I was in an accident, I'd justify it some way. It was always somebody else's fault. I always blame people, places, and things. I never took a look at my part in anything. And my war cry was, that I'm not hurting anyone. And if anyone approached me about my drinking, they were history. I didn't want to hear it. When the outside trouble peaked or got, you know, really bad, I thought, and I didn't think very well, I thought, well, gee, maybe I'll get married and settle down and that would be okay. And then I thought, ah, that's a horrible idea. And I went to Florida. A friend of mine's husband offered me a job and off I went. And I was in this office. I was managing this office. And I was all alone in the office and there was a bar in the office and you know, I really probably don't even have to say any more than that. You can imagine what was going on. I would get there and I would drink and sometimes just pass out in the office, wake up, dust myself off, and start over. And, you know, it was just a horrible existence. I didn't know any way out and yet I thought that this was just, you know, the drinking was keeping me together. I lasted there a couple of years. The business was sold, and I came back to Massachusetts. And my father took me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember I went just to get them, my parents, off my back. And, you know, and I walked into that meeting and, you know, I heard a speaker say how this disease progresses in you even when you're not drinking. I heard a speaker say that if you're an alcoholic and you continue to drink, things can and will get worse. That's a guarantee. And, you know, I heard some things that I could identify with, but I guess I wasn't in the listening mode. I remember a woman approached me at my first meeting, and she said, no, I said, how do you get a sponsor? And I said this again, just to, like, you know, have my father know that I was making an attempt, and I wanted this woman to know that I was, you know, interested. I was pretending to be interested. And anyway, I said, how do you get a sponsor? And she said, you'll find out. And she said that, she was very kind, she said that to get me back to another meeting. And I, you know, called her some name and we left the meeting. And I was to spend like another 5 years out there, and it was absolutely horrible. It was beyond horrible. And, you know, in looking back on that today, it was just, you know, my days were a series of waking up, throwing up, wondering where I was, where the car was, you know, what I did. You know, I'd have to call someone to find out what happened. I couldn't, and I had to do that like from my earliest recollection in drinking. The blackouts, I didn't know what happened. I'd have to call someone to confirm if I had a good time. It was At this time, I was, I had a lot of enablers in my drinking. And that's, enablers are well-meaning family, friends, clergy, doctors, who don't let you suffer the consequences of your actions. They're there to pull you out of a whatever. And I remember this one time I went to the family doctor, and I had I was very sick. I was very sick physically, as well as mentally and spiritually. But I had an infected liver and a seizure disorder. And this doctor said to me, he said, well, you know, any admission to a hospital that has to do with alcoholism doesn't look good to, you know, employers, whatever. So I'm going to put something else on the admission slip, but you have to promise me that you will go to the psych unit after we clear you up physically. And I was like, I was just glad to hear that. I felt safe in the hospital. They cleared me up physically. Off I went to the psych unit. And, you know, I got to the psych unit. I mean, I wasn't even, you know, like humiliated or ashamed or anything. This was like, I don't know. It was a safe haven. Because I know on some level, left to my own devices, I was going to, you know, have a repeat performance of drinking, drugging. So anyway, I'm in the psych unit, and you know, once I was withdrawn from everything, I was fairly normal. Or I had become an accomplished actress, I guess, during this whole cycle to get what I wanted. So I was coming across as, you know, okay. Anyway, I got in with the nurses. I'm playing bridge with the nurses. I'm helping the nurses round up patients. They were shorthanded, and you know, after a little while, some of these patients were asking me for advice. And the really scary part was, like, I was giving it. And I was like the head nut there. And anyway, I was there for 9 weeks. Out I came. And once I felt better physically, I would change something stupid like brands or locations to and start drinking again. And it was always going to be different. And the only difference of it ever was the severity of the trouble I was in when I put it down, and I never put it down willingly. When I was first coming around too, the rehabs were in vogue, and I did have a job, and I had an excellent insurance policy, and off I'd go to these plush rehabs. They were like five-star hotels on a lake. And they would withdraw you very easily, 28-day stay, and out you'd go. And same thing. I never knew that this disease was physical, spiritual, and mental. I just thought it was physical. And if I felt okay physically, I could do it again. And, you know, I had several of those. And then my employer started frowning on my long absences from work. And you know, and so many people were trying to help me. And then I started showing up at the local hospital detox unit for their 5-day spin-dry cycle. You know, and there, you know, it was like, there I was, a young woman in this dingy room with the smiley slippers and a striped robe. And, you know, and I never said to myself, what the hell are you doing here? It was just, I guess it became like the price was okay to pay to get me back on my feet to drink again. And anyway, that went on for a while. And then one day, I just was beaten, just totally, totally done. I couldn't do it anymore. And I crawled into this church, and I'm sobbing, and I got on, you know, I knelt down, and I was crying, and I asked God for help. And I really meant it. I meant it, you know, from the bottom of my soul, please God help me. And it was like a priest kind of materialized out of nowhere, and he said, "Are you okay?" And I told him that lie. Oh yeah, I'm fine. But I mean, I was a mess. I was such a mess. Anyway, through a series of events, my higher power had a, who I choose to call God, had to do some other stuff to get my attention. And, you know, I went to jail in a protective custody, and I went to another rehab. And it was there that the that I became willing to do anything to get this monkey off my back. I realized that God was with me all the time, but I abandoned God. I was just, the only business I did with him was to ask for help if I was in a jam, and I never kept up my end of the bargain. And the most important thing I did was the day that I left that last rehab, I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that proved to make all the difference in the world. You know, I went initially, I was terrified not to. And I went to a meeting, I joined a group, I got a sponsor, I listened to what, you know, people were telling me to do. My best thinking got me drunk. And it was time for someone else to take over the reins. And I did that. That's what I did. And you know, I work this program today just like I did back then when I first came here. I'm on my knees every morning, and I don't analyze it. I don't say, do I believe? Do I not believe? Which came first, the chicken or the egg? I just do it. Like the Nike commercial, I get down on my knees and I ask for help. I ask my higher power for help. And you know, I go about my business. I'm involved in meetings. I'm involved in the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which my sponsor told me, you're getting into the steps because they're the meat and potatoes of this program. She said, you have to change the person that you brought here. And I went to step meetings, and it took me a while to even recognize that there was anything wrong with me. But I went. And I kept doing picked up the tools of this program and started going about my life, and what a difference it made. And, you know, when I have a day of sobriety, I'm back on my knees in the evening out of common courtesy to say thank you to this higher power who I choose to call God. And it's worked. You know, I mean, life is life, though. You know, there's problems, there's situations, but I can honestly say, because of this program, because of the people in this program, because of my higher power, who I choose to call God, I've been able to walk through every situation that life has thrown at me. And again, I'm not unique. You know, Earth people, who I refer to, those who don't really have a problem with alcohol, I mean, they have problems too. You know, life, again, life is life. When my life turned around, you know, I grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was pretty young when I got here. And I remember at my meetings, like, you know, I thought everybody in the room was like 85. Now I'm getting close to that. But I just, you know, I hung on and, you know, I just became happy, joyous, and free. I had a, you know, that horrible burden was off my back. I didn't have to wake up and wonder where, you know, and have a drink, or wonder where I was going to get it, and then consuming it and wondering where I was going to get the next one. And that my total thinking process was about where I'm going to get that next drink. And that freedom of not having to do that. And that freedom of feeling happy, joyous, and free, priceless, absolutely priceless gift. One of the steps talks about making amends. And before my parents passed, I was able to make amends to them, and that was just, that was huge. I mean, I put them through, I tortured them. Not intentionally, I mean, I was very sick, but that was, you know, when my father, they were both, when they both got ill, I was able to be there for them. I was able to be part of the solution and not the problem. And that was so important. That was so freeing. You know, I went, I just was able, you know, by picking up the tools of this program, I was able to do life. And I just, and I did life. And one of the most important things that I do today is I try to give back what was so freely given to me, which is the 12th step of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I've been on lots of commitments. I've sponsored people, and I have 100% success rate with sponsees because I've stayed sober. You know, they've kept me on my toes, these newcomers, and you know, and I try to give back, and you know, I became like a better person, a better daughter, a better friend, a better everything, and I owe it all to this program and my higher power, and the people in the program, and like I said, I work this the peace of mind though is just. And the and asking for the obsession to be removed and it being removed, absolutely priceless. It's like I get what I need in Alcoholics Anonymous as opposed to what I want. And when I get what I need, I eventually figure out that's what I wanted all along in the first place. I can't say enough good about this program. I recommend it to everyone, to anyone. It's just, you know, I've made friends that I'll have for a lifetime. We have a lot of fun, and but this is very serious. This is very serious business. This is a fatal illness, and you know, I believe that anyone who gets to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous has been touched by the hand of God. It's like a miracle. A lot of people out there don't even make it to the doors. So, again, every morning I get up, I'm on my knees. I get on my knees to get on my feet. I ask this higher power for help to stay away from a drink, a substitute, not to hurt anyone. I attend meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I try to pass it on to newcomers and or to anyone who's there. I'm involved in the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous because, like I mentioned before, my sponsor told me that I had to change the person I brought here. I'm grateful. I'm grateful most days. I'm happy, joyous, and free most days. If I'm not, in hindsight or when I examine the day, I usually recognize that I'm trying to, you know, be in control or be the boss or whatever. And when I stay sober at night, you know, when night rolls around, I'm on my knees again out of common courtesy to say thank you. And it's worked. And I never fix anything that works, so I'm going to keep coming. Thank you.
Randy, it's so really wonderful. Thank you so much.
Oh, we got
to shut it off. Let's see.